Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
I'm starting to wonder if I'll ever see Dad again. The dream starts off the same, the darkness, the scrape of blowing, twisted branches on the window, like the tapping fingernails of a giant. Wakes me, and I try to open my eyes, but all is black. I hear the rain falling, a rushing of sound, as if my bed's in a cave hemmed in by a waterfall pouring past the only exit to the outside world. I must walk through it. This is G.P. Gottlieb, host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today I'm talking to author Brad Schaefer about his moving and emotional novel, The Extraordinary. Wesley is 14, and since the age of 2, has been unable to communicate with anyone except his father, who understands him. His sister Becca breezes in sometimes from college. His brother Thomas is busy being a star high school football player. And his mother is still in mourning for the baby she lost to sudden infant death syndrome years before. Wes's siblings just want their family to be normal, and Wes just wants to be left alone to follow his chosen rituals with his father always by his side. Hi, Brad. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So what was your impetus for writing The Extraordinary?
Well, it actually started off as a story about a family dealing with PTSD. And the reason why I chose that subject matter is my father was actually a wounded combat veteran of the Korean War. And he had suffered PTSD. You know, back then they didn't really have a name for it. This was the 70s and 80s. But he had suffered it for a while. And so I wanted to kind of tell the story of how a family deals with that. But I felt that there was something more that was needed. And I noticed that many friends of mine have children who are on the spectrum. You know, they have various forms of autism. And I began to look at them very closely. And I wanted to try and understand what was going on in their minds, you know, if possible. Obviously, each manifestation of autism is its own universe. But with that said, I sort of took the idea of writing a story about an autistic child telling his or her own story through, you know, the first person voice. But I wanted to throw them into a dramatic situation. And so I figured I would toss them into sort of the world that I knew as a child growing up with a PTSD suffering veteran father. And that's where The Extraordinary came about.
Wow, because the father in this is really a lovely character. Why is he the only one able to understand Wesley, the autistic teenager?
Well, it's funny. I wasn't sure how to... I didn't know if I wanted to go into that too much or let the reader sort of come to his or her own conclusion, but I think I look at it because the others are rather self-absorbed characters. You know, I mean, as you had mentioned, the mother is dealing with grief from the loss of a baby, which she considers to be a quote unquote normal baby, as opposed to her autistic son. The sister is off, you know, making her way in the world in Manhattan, and the son is getting ready for college. And the son is, you know, the older brother of Wes is getting ready for college and all that. So all these people have their own things going on. Whereas the father, his main thing is, you know, as a leader of a platoon, he first has to look out for those underneath him. And I think that sort of spills over into his love of his son. And also, just for whatever reason, because he's not so distracted with his own solipsistic needs, he is one who sort of can peer through that proverbial, you know, block of marble to see the angel within. Mm. And I thought the fact that he was, quite frankly, I mean, a trained killer. I mean, that's really what a Marine is when you think about it. And they'll tell you that. I thought that was an interesting juxtaposition between how he, you know, what he does for a living and how he actually viewed his own family and his own son. So I thought that was kind of an interesting contrast.
I hadn't even thought of it that way, but that's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Wes's mother explains that Wes seemed perfectly normal until he turned two. And she wonders if it was vaccines or anything they did that made him autistic. I just read a recent study that brings the very diagnosis of autism into question. So what's your take on it? Is it, as Wes's teacher says, just a combination of genetics and environment?
I'm going to be honest. I look at it more from the psychological aspect. I really haven't studied the medical aspect of it too much. My daughter, who was in med school, could probably tell you more about that. Actually, she was one of the impetuses for me writing this book, because she had written a paper on autism and its influence on families. So that's what sort of sparked the idea as well. I don't, from what I have seen, and again, I'm not a physician or anything like that, I don't believe vaccines have anything to do with it. I just think the mind is so complicated. And I think part of it is awareness. I think as we understand more of what autism is, I think more we start to realize that more and more people fall under the umbrella of it, whereas before they were just considered oddballs or considered, you know, antisocial or even ADA, you know, ADD or something like that. So I'm not really sure what the reason is. Excuse me. There are a lot of stories of people whose children did seem perfectly fine until they reach a certain age, and I think there might be something worth exploring there. But I'm really not qualified to be the one to opine on that.
I know that you did a lot of research, so there are so many heartbreaking moments in The Extraordinary, and I'm wondering if you ever found yourself crying a bit as you wrote this novel.
Oh, well, you know, I've always said that you don't know what goes on behind closed doors of a family. You know, many times people say, oh, they seem so normal or they seem so happy. And then you hear like of a divorce, you hear of like some horrible crime or what have you. And, you know, I did find myself, because I'm saying, gosh, I wonder how many families really are dealing with either this or something like that and aren't really handling it well at first. The study that I bring up my daughter, who wrote that when she was in college, she minored in psychology, when it was about impacts of autism on especially mothers, whether they're working or whether they're homemakers, it seems like the burden falls on them. And so, you know, I found myself feeling for the mother a lot in this. But at the same time, you know, I wanted to make her a three-dimensional character, so I didn't want to make her just this sympathetic victim. She definitely has issues of her own. But I think if you throw somebody like this into a family that has issues, it can be very volatile. And mm-hmm. I think I tried to bring that out in my book. Because really, and then you throw in a severe mental illness like PTSD, and then the impacts that it has, you know, I think there's... Yeah, it did make me cry in the sense that I really hope that I'm not describing too many families out there, but I have a feeling that there are more than I would like to think.
Yeah. The father's gun appears early in the story, and we know what Chekhov has to say about that. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, there's something very threatening and very awesome about a gun in the house, you know, and about pulling out this weapon of death. And then it falling into the hands of the autistic boy is, you know, I mean, it was a bit of a vehicle for heightening the tension. But to be honest, it was sort of loosely based on something that I experienced myself in my own life. We had a gun in the house, and we had not, you know, a combat veteran. And I mean, like, you know, something right out of Saving Private Ryan veteran. I'm not talking about a guy in the back. You know, this guy was a Marine in the Korean War. And if any of your listeners just want to look up what happened to the 1st Marine Division in Korea, well, that gives you a backdrop. So there was something very, and that was something that he was familiar with, you know, something that he had used and used to great effect. And so the question is he going to use it on himself? Is he going to use it on others? And very often, unfortunately, we see that that does turn out to be the case, especially in this country for some reason.
Yeah. Let's talk about Peter Scott, Wes's father. He's such a good guy. Where does he come from in your mind? How did he spring out of your mind? Is he based on somebody? You said your father had PTSD. Is he a lot like your father?
In many ways, he was. My father was a more complicated man, was a more, you know, he had several sides to his personality, where Peter is a little bit more linear. And I mean, but the good moments that he has with his son, really, I pulled right out of my own memory. I was the youngest of five. And I mean, as you're starting to tell, there is a decent amount of autobiography in the book. And my father was always very kind to me. He was a rough man, and he had many flaws, and but he was always extremely kind to me, to the point of being embarrassingly braggadocious about me. And the fact is, I lost him when I was only 16. The PTSD finally did get the better of him. And so for that reason, I think I made this character to be someone that I think, you know, my father could have been. So it was an aspirational character. And I wanted, again, the fact that he was the trained killer in the house. He was the one who also saw the beauty, you know, which I think I was just drawn to the character, probably because I really didn't have a father much in my life, you know, after I turned 16. And I'm 54, and actually 50, God help me, I'm 55 now. So I think that might have been a little bit of me projecting what I wish I had more of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And now Wes's mother, she's not a bad person, but Wes doesn't feel love from her. Is she incapable of showing tenderness?
She is sort of that. You know, I make her the daughter of a somewhat wealthy man. And she's very pretty. And she's very, I think I describe her as painfully skinny. And she is sort of that icy Protestant reserve type. And she, I think with her, I wanted to make her a powerful character because, again, the research shows that, at least the research I have read, and, you know, if people out there can feel free to correct me, I'm certainly no expert, but the research that I have read shows that the burden of an autistic child tends to fall on the mother, regardless of the situation of, you know, breadwinner or whatnot. I don't know why that is. I don't know if there's just something about, you know, the maternal instinct or something about just the relationship between mother and child. But so in her case, I think she's a bit resentful that, and she does a lot of the work, and Peter gets all the glory and all the love. So I think by the time we become voyeurs in this family's life, when Wes is 14, we start to see years of pent up, you know, subtle resentment in her. And I think it starts to manifest itself in a coldness about her and a desire to both get to know her son, but at the same time, disliking him for two reasons. One, because he doesn't seem to get to know her or want to. He's really his father's boy. And he read his father's the one who called him the extraordinary boy as opposed to his ordinaries, right? The ords, as he calls them. And two is she feels like she's being punished for some reason. She lost their child, Annabelle, to SIDS. And the next one to come along is Wes, who is, you know, not abnormal in her mind. Obviously, people with autistic children know very well that's not the case. But so I think there's both resentment and there's almost a wondering of like, why is, you know, what have I done wrong? Am I a bad person? So yeah, you said that she's not a bad person, but I think good people can do bad things and good people can think the wrong way. And I think she sort of falls into that. So in a way, she's more three-dimensional really than Peter, who's sort of, and that makes sense, right? Because a military man is more linear, you know, his job is to be straightforward, you know, especially an officer.
Yeah.
So I found her a very interesting character, and she's not really based on anyone. She's really based on how I would be if I was unappreciated or if I felt unappreciated by my own offspring.
Okay. That makes sense. Peter was initially upset that his son wasn't allowed to go to a regular school. Instead, he works one-on-one with the tutor. But it seems to be working despite what happens throughout the book. But I love the character of his teacher, of Antoinette. Can you introduce her?
Yeah. Antoinette is, even she has some three dimension to her. She's more than just a teacher. She is the one who, you know, her job is to work and get Wes to open up. And she is just this woman who, she lost her father on 9/11. And so I think she appreciates life and she appreciates what she can do for those that, like Wes, who aren't well understood. And yeah, I did like her character because I do like the fact that she's looking out for the family and not just Wes. Like, I think she sees the big picture. So she's very bright and she's very likable. She's attractive. You know, I mean, Wes, you know, points that out basically as Wes gets, he's starting to turn into a teenage boy, right? So he's starting to notice Antoinette in more than just, you know, a teacher way, which is a bit of an aspect to the book. I mean, I could have made the book a lot longer and really delved into these characters, but I thought the way the narrative was, I'm sorry if I'm going on a tangent here, but I thought the way the narrative was of being a first person, there was only really so much the reader would want to read before it became exhausting. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the idea, because I think it is exhausting when you have nothing but all these thoughts coming in your head. I think even Elon Musk said that his brain was on rapid fire all the time and it became exhausting. And he's now explaining that he too has autism. So, you know, it comes in all shapes and sizes. But I did like her character. I liked that school. She's based on a few teachers I know who teach young children, you know, not in those types of schools, and where I've had very good experiences with my own children. So that's sort of, and she's also a bit of an homage to those who teach and those who do the hard work for, I believe, underpaid. So,
right. Yeah, that's so true. Mm-hmm. How'd you come up with the idea of pepper spray as a remedy for dealing with an outburst of an autistic child? Is that a real thing? Because it sounds kind of abusive.
Yeah, that is a real thing. That's based on, I can't really say too much about it, but that's based on someone I know. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, so it's a real thing.
Yeah, that did not pop out of my head. That came with personal experience of, personal observational experience. Let's just leave it at that.
It's hard to judge it because how would we know what would be the thing you could do when somebody is totally out of control? And it did bring Wes into control, even though it hurt his eyes.
Yeah, I don't judge that because what a lot of people with children on the spectrum and have to deal with is that they're not always going to be little kids. At some point, they turn into full-grown adults, you know, body-wise. And Wes is turning into a big man, right? Like even his sister says, he doesn't realize how strong he's getting, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah, I mean, I will tell you this. I used to work, I told you I was from Illinois, and I used to work in high school at Little City for the Mentally Handicapped in Palatine, which was a wonderful place. I think it's still there. It was a wonderful place for people with special needs that they brought them in, right? You know, special mental needs. And I worked with everybody, you know, I was a phys ed instructor, you know, I worked with everybody from very, very mild, pardon the terminology, this is the terminology of the day, but this is the 80s, but mildly to profoundly retarded. And mm-hmm. obviously autism is not the same. I'm not making that comparison, but we would do things called emergency mat rest where somebody would be very strong. And if they were starting to have a tantrum of some sort, I forget the actual term we used to use for it, but they're going off, I think is what we would say. You would actually have to get behind this person, put your arms around them in a bear hug, like, you know, behind their back and pull them to the ground. And it could sometimes be quite violent, but you're doing it for their own good. and for the protection of the others. But it was very hard to do that because, you know, these people can't help it. And, you know, you felt really bad afterwards. So I think I tried to capture that emotion after they were done spraying him. I know Rebecca, the sister, felt very guilty about it all the time. But, you know, the alternative was Wes could have unknowingly beat her brains out, you know, not even realizing it. I mean, I think actually that's what probably sparked my interest in mental illness to begin with, was way back then too. So maybe this book's been rattling around in my brain for a long time.
Right. That part was heartbreaking. What is Wes's attraction to Sound of Music, and why did you choose that particular show, although it's obviously a wonderful show?
All right. Well, this is going to sound very unprofound, but I just know that people with autism, a lot of them fixate on one thing, and I just like the sound of music.
Who doesn't, right?
I mean, okay. You know, I love the Von. I mean, how can you not love the Von Trapps, right? So I wanted to throw something happy in his life. And, you know, if I woke up every morning to the little goat herd, you know, even after a while, it starts to drive the brother crazy. But, you know, that's a lot better than him waking up to having to watch the movie Seven over and over again, right?
Right. I was shocked when Wes, in his meandering, in his thinking, was able to decipher the chord progression of Can't Find My Way Home. Mm-hmm. As a musician, that was something really, I always listened for it, but we didn't get any clue that he was a musician or understood that. Can you talk about how you chose that song and other songs mentioned? And how did you come up with the idea of Wes being able to figure it out?
Well, I think, a lot of high functioning autistic people I've known, and I've known a few, are also very mathematically gifted, or, you know, and they tend to see patterns. I'm not making a generalization, because there's literally as many manifestations as there are, you know, as there are autistic people in the world. So I figured he was very mathematical. Like, if you notice, he likes to count the steps that he takes. He likes, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. He understands, you know, concepts like prime numbers. He understands, you know, Fibonacci and all that stuff. And music is really very mathematical when you think about it. You know, there's a 2, 5, 7. I forget. I'm blowing it, but there's a
1, 4, 5.
Thank you. There's a chord progression like that. And, you know, as a musician, I mean, I play music too. I play piano and guitar, and I've always found that, that there's definitely patterns and there's definitely mathematics to it. And so it makes sense that he would be drawn to that part of it. And then the song Can't Find My Way Home, I think the lyrics, just drew him in, because, you know, come down on your throat, come down from your throne and leave your, you know, he's basically feels like he's up there isolated, especially, I believe that was the scene where he was after his son, and he had had that terrible altercation and the rain's coming down, and he's watching his brother, and he's watching his older brother, who tries to apologize and he doesn't want anything to do with it, leaving. And as he's pulling out, he's listening to that music, and he's, you know, and I think the music just drew him in. So music is, you know, I always consider music to be the ultimate art form. So it makes sense that a highly functioning, highly intelligent person would be drawn to that in ways that many of us are not, or ways that many of us miss. At least I do. I can't speak for others.
So which character, you seem to have a connection to every character just about, but which character do you feel closest to?
Wes himself, because I've always been a bit of an introvert, which would surprise people who know me. But I find a lot of joy in solitude, not isolation, but, you know, like I have a family, I have a wife, I have children, I have a very nice social network. And I do like to go out and I do like to hang out with people. And I like to interact with people. In fact, as a writer, you have to, right? And that's where your source material is, when you walk out the door. But I'm also find myself very, very attracted to the quietude of life. Like, I don't like crowds. And I think so, Wes sort of reminds me of, there's a little bit of me in him as well, you know? And then I guess secondly would be the father, of course, but for a totally different reason. The father, I'm very sympathetic to the father, because I try to imagine what goes on in a soldier's mind, something, or sorry, Marine in this case, something I can't imagine, you know, like, so when I owned my own company, I actually would raise money for wounded warriors. Oh. So I've always been attracted to, I use the word attracted, I've always been drawn to that, those people, you know, to veterans and whatnot as well. So, but Wes is more who I am, I think, than the father.
That is really cool to know. Mm-hmm. So, Brad, I know this book came out months ago, and mm-hmm. I'm guessing that you're working on something else. Can you talk about it?
Yeah, actually, I've got several irons in the fire. I have one completed novel that is called Avenue A. I mean, I like to bounce from subject to subject. I don't know if your listeners know, but I wrote a book about World War II before this, about a German fighter pilot who saves a family of Jews during the height of World War II. And it's about his internal struggle with being, you know, with being a fighting for the Nazi regime, but realizing that it's wrong. So I've covered World War II. This is more of my, you know, domestic contemporary book. And my next, the book I just finished is called Avenue A, and that is takes place in 1930s New York. And that's about an African-American cop from Harlem who's based on the first African-American policeman in New York City named Battle. And this man's name is Clayton Wells, Detective Wells. And he's pulled down in the height of the Depression in the middle of the 30s. For some reason, he's ordered to leave Harlem and go down to Alphabet City to try and help an all-white precinct solve a series of murders going on in Tompkins Square Park. And he doesn't know why, and there's obviously reasons behind it. But that book was a lot of fun because there were a lot, first of all, I love history, and I love the history of New York, my adopted city. And this has characters from Fiorello LaGuardia to Meyer Lansky to Charles Lindbergh is in it, Katharine Hepburn, Marlena Dietrich, Henry Ford. So it's a very interesting, F. Scott Fitzgerald makes a drunken appearance in it. So it's a very very fun book, I think, to read, but also it's based again on some of the experiences that this African-American policeman Battle had. And they were not all pleasant, as you can imagine. You know, as my brother always said, the pioneers are usually the ones who end up with the arrows in their backs, you know, but I think I'm kind of drawn to those types of people. And then I literally just finished the very rough draft of a book that is about a man who loses his son in a car accident and about a woman whose father has Alzheimer's severe, who somehow find each other through the chasm of letter writing, and they end up meeting in St. John's just as a hurricane's coming about. So
wow. Yeah, well, so that's kind I'll look of a forward. I'll look forward to whichever one comes out next.
Yeah, that's up to my agent.
Yeah. Right. Not up to the writer.
Yeah.
Brad Schaefer, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, pleasure was mine. I really appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining me. Again, this is G.P. Gottlieb, author of the Whipped and Sipped Mystery Series and host for New Books in Literature, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I've been talking with Brad Schaefer, author of The Extraordinary. May your free time be filled with wonderful literature. Happy reading, everyone.